thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Today we have a special guest on the show, kind of breaking our chain of college speakers and high school state champions. We have with us Fergus Connolly, and Fergus Connolly is one of the world's leading experts in team sports and human performance. He's the only coach to have worked full-time in every major league around the world. Fergus helps teams win at the highest level with integrated application of best practices in all areas of performance. A book I read and is highly acclaimed is his book Game Changer with Phil White, and it's a blueprint for coaches to present a holistic philosophy for winning in all team sports. And if you haven't read it, I highly suggest you pick it up. It's like a textbook for winning. Some things maybe you haven't thought about, it really help you see things in a different light and deeper. Fergus has served as the Director of Elite Performance for the San Francisco 49ers, Sports Science Director with the Welsh Rugby Union, and Performance Director and Director of Football Operations for the University of Michigan Football. He's mentored and advised coaches, support staff, players in the NBA, MLB, NHL, Australian Rules Football, and International Cricket. And he's trained world boxing champions and advises elite military units and companies across the globe. He's a keynote speaker and consultant to high-performing organizations around the world, and we're really excited to have him here today to talk about some lessons from his new book, 59 Lessons, Working with the World's Elite Coaches, Athletes, and Special Forces. So welcome to the podcast. Again, second time having you here, Fergus Connolly.
Keith, thank you very much. It's always nice to get back speaking with you guys again. You're doing great work.
I appreciate that. So are you.
I'm trying to share, trying to share lessons. Most of them are mistakes, things that you, that you learn on your journey. And, there's so many great coaches and people doing such great work out there. And nobody has the perfect answers. So it's always great to be able to speak with you guys.
Absolutely. Well, let's dig into this new book you have, Fergus, and you present 59 lessons, and I really like the organization of it. So you start off each lesson with a little bit of an introduction. You give a corollary, and then you give the application. Talk to us a little bit about the setup of each chapter or each lesson.
Yeah, so as I was writing Game Changer, all of these lessons or stories or experiences, came to me, and I took a note of them, just different things I picked up from coaches, from players, from units that I'd been with. And they were the moments in my life where I learned something that was different or unique. And I wanted to share those lessons, for a number of reasons. One is that they're original. They're things that I was there that happened. I'm not copying them from somebody else, which is important, because you're not just, parroting something that you've heard somebody else say. Also, I wanted to pass those lessons on to the next generation of coaches coming through, so that, they could learn from, from the journey I've been on, and to pass it on to the next generation, because the book is actually a thank you then to all of the great people in our industry who, took time to help me. And there are a few people who are mentioned in the book who are no longer with us. And, it's important to say thank you to those who've helped us on our way. And I put together these 59 lessons. And, I want to explain the story behind how I learned it. And then the application of, how you make that work in your environment. But I also then put in an example of how you can take some of these things too far. Because as you said, sometimes, and I've made this mistake too, we cut and paste something.
Yes.
And we just use it, literally without taking the time to know what not to do. And I've said, I think I say it in 59 lessons, 80% of your job as a coach is knowing what not to do. You know, just when you see somebody make a mistake or you're about to intervene, it's sometimes taking that time to go, okay, you know, maybe he's got it. Maybe I don't need to say it. Maybe I can just pause. Maybe he's learning it himself. So it's just before we intervene or before we make that decision, just am I weighing up everything else? And is this the right decision to make? So it was just to give context to each lesson.
I think that's so important. And, you know, when I talk to my guests before we get going on the podcast, I do a lot of research on who's going to be on, and I'll talk to a coach and say, hey, coach, you know, I read about this and, you know, how this happened here. He's like, yeah, well, it didn't quite go down that way, and there's some other things that go along with it. There's always, with everything that we see that's worked out in a positive way, there's some things those coaches learned along the way that they maybe stumbled a bit, or it's not absolute in every situation. Yet, as coaches, it's just kind of our nature of how we do things. We got an idea. We like it. We're going all in, and we're implementing that thing. But we kind of forget that part, which you call the corollary, or the little bit of that warning that goes along with it that, you know, you might want to think about this as well, that everything can't be necessarily an absolute.
Absolutely, yes. That's 100% correct. Like, I was having a conversation with a colleague last night about, So, you know, if an athlete takes off and sprints over, say, 10 meters, if they don't come upright or if they can't keep a straight level of acceleration, you know, sometimes that's down to low back strength. But you have to look at the age, the size, and the mechanics of the athlete. You know, it doesn't work in every case, or it's not the cause of poor acceleration in every case. So it's taking all of those factors. And that's where, you know, the work that you guys are doing are creating better thinkers and better problem solvers as coaches. And that's, in my opinion, the single greatest factor to sustainable success as a coach is to be constantly, critically evaluating what you're doing and improving it bit by bit. And that only comes from looking at each, you know, theory or rule or guideline and being critical about it and looking at it and applying it properly. That critical thinking, the development of critical thinking in coaches is very, very important.
Well, Fergus, I'm excited you are going to share some of those lessons with us that are in the book. And the first one that you picked out is lesson two in your book, that aim is not to win once. And when I think about that, you know, brought to mind, first of all, this group of coaches who are speaking at our national conference, six of them, and together they've won 2,327 football games. They've won 59 state championships. And I was talking to, I listed that group on Twitter. I was talking to the coach who had the least, and he had like 307 wins. So like, by no means is he doing poorly. And then we're looking at the coach at the top, which is JT Curtis, and JT had 569 wins. And his coach Jones from Greenwood in Arkansas, he's saying, man, I would have to coach another 30 years to hit that. And I said, well, I would have to coach like three sports and run an AAU team in the summer. first come out of retirement, I guess. So, but the point is, like, our goal for all of us is that long-term success. It's great to get those championships early on. It's great to be able to have those accolades for our program, for our players, for our coaching staff. But the long-term success really comes in those teams who can do it year in and year out. And prime example of that, you know, you just saw it this past weekend as we're recording this with the Patriots and Bill Belichick. So, Fergus, talk to us a little bit about what you teach in this lesson.
So I think any coach, I shouldn't say any coach, but, you know, almost any coach can go to a team, take over a team, and drive it very hard in the first year, or for 2 years or 3 years, and get an improvement. But to build something that's sustainable, that continues to improve, that doesn't suffer, that doesn't fall off after a number of years, that's unique. You know, it's something I picked up from, you know, from a Portuguese coach initially, he was the first one that planted the seed. And he gave an example, you know, of coaches who make two mistakes. There are three reasons for it. One is there's going to be burnout. If you come in and drive everybody hard for a year, yes, you get a sudden improvement. Everybody can do that. But you'll eventually get fatigue. So you've got a choice. You either change your players or change your coaches if you can. That's the only way you can keep it going. The second reason is you need trust and buy-in. Like, people have to want to continue to commit to you over a period of time. So you have to be honest. You have to have character, a good character, and carry your staff with you. They have to want to coach with you. The third reason is that you must constantly go back to and reinforce the basics at the start of every year, because as each year goes on and there are changes, sometimes, you know, the team gets a little bit confused or forgets what the actual core intention of each principle is, or, you know, how you coach. So, you know, and I've had this conversation as well with CEOs of very successful companies, and they'll agree, you can change the CEO, a new CEO can come in and just up the tempo or up the quantity of work or the volume of work. And yes, you'll get a sudden boost, but it's not sustainable. That trajectory of sustainable success is unique. That's different. So we're talking about something that continues to dominate and continues to improve on itself. And there's a sweet spot for that. There are a number of ingredients that go into that. We were talking earlier, I was saying that, you know, you can do it a number of ways, but one of the things with teams I've been with is that the goal has been to create a team that plays so well and dominates so well that you force the governing body to change a rule to stop you. You know, it should be some outlandish vision or goal that is not based on just beating an opponent. It's about building something that the team, that everybody can buy into, is committed to, that they want to be part of, and that they're going to continue to improve and can take pride in. Because if it's just focused about purely just about wins only, setbacks, losses become huge setbacks. It has to be something bigger. It has to be something that people can buy into and can commit to. You want your people to be able to commit to this higher idea. So that's where it's not necessarily about building a legacy, but it's about building something that it's about sustainable success. And that's just different than getting sudden wins or having just one successful year. In Ireland, we call that a strawberry season, because I don't know if many of your listeners might not be gardeners, but if you plant strawberries in one patch of ground, they'll grow well for 1 year, but they never grow well in that patch of ground the second year. So that's why we call it a strawberry season. You have to constantly move strawberries if you're growing strawberries. So if you don't learn anything about coaching, you learn something about gardening today. So you don't want strawberry seasons, you want sustainable success.
With that idea, Fergus, you talked about a number of examples there. And I know in the football part of it, you pointed out the Patriots. So I think, especially given we're not even a week past the Super Bowl here, talk to us a little bit about how the Patriots show the application of this.
Well, I think there are two things. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, Belichick is a very – so I shouldn't say simple, but he has as simple an approach as is necessary, not as simple as is possible, but it's not incredibly complex. You know, one of the other things, you know, at the 49ers, I used to pester the old coaches as well about, or the older players about, what was Bill Walsh like. And one of the things that would constantly come back was, on day one of each season, the talk was exactly the same. It was the same with Bo Schembechler at Michigan. The talk on day one was pretty much the very same talk. This is who we are. This is what we do. These are the standards. This is how we're going to play. And that, starting from the start on day one, and at the start of each season, reestablished that this is how we're going to play. And you kept the message simple, and you built on that. That's where the complexity comes from. So the output that we see on game day is built on you know, a system that's as simple as is necessary. And that's incredibly important. It, you know, you can't start with a very complex approach. You have to build on very simple principles and objectives and allow your players to, you know, to develop and give them the autonomy and ownership.
Fergus, moving into our second lesson you share with us, it's lesson three in your book. The title of it is We Only Play Away Games. And the idea in general, as I read it, was really you have to approach things as the underdog. When you're thinking about an away game, especially in football, the home team, for whatever reason, has a distinct advantage. They're playing on their own turf. They have their own crowd. They're used to playing in that venue, etc. But at the same time, you point out that you need to have confidence. So I love how you blend those two ideas in here.
Yeah, it's a constant balance. You know, I tell the story of sitting with a special forces commander. We were talking about sharing the similarities and the differences between, you know, elite performance in sport and elite performance in the military. You know, I pointed out, look, we in sport, what we do is nothing compared to what you do. In fact, you guys allow us, you know, the luxury of playing a sport on a Sunday, you know, which, you know, nobody gets to see the work that you do. I said there are two big differences. I said, first of all, we get Monday. You know, if we screw up at the weekend, we get Monday to practice and fix the mistake. Sometimes you guys don't get a second chance. The second big one is we know when our games are and we can plan for them. We can peak and we can, you know, prepare. You can get a call at the drop of a hat and have to be halfway around the world in 24 hours or less. So I said, there's no, you know, we can't compare. And he stopped and he said, there's one other difference, Fergus. We only play away games. And it hit me afterwards as I was going away, that mentality of every game is an away game is an incredibly important mindset to have because it avoids any complacency. And in particular, when you're playing an opponent that you're expected to beat or you're on a mission to beat someone or you've got a head of steam or you've got a number of wins, complacency is your greatest threat, you know. So keeping that we only play away games mentality helps keep everybody on edge. The other important lesson with that is that in reality, you're only ever playing yourself. You're only ever playing against the best performance that you've had to date. And focusing excessively on the opponent can distract you. So, you know, if you're focusing against, you know, a state champs or you're focusing against somebody who hasn't had a win yet, that you need to avoid getting too focused on those things. You really should be focusing on what your KPIs are. What are the key performance indicators for your team, for yourself? And you have to try and beat those every single time. As a coach, that's critical because that establishes consistency. Because at the end of the day, whether you win or lose is secondary to how well you perform to your standard. The key should be finding that consistency in performance. It's something, you know, that, you know, it's very important, you know, like you speak about the Super Bowl, you, in the most important games, it comes down to not making mistakes. You're not, you know, in a Super Bowl or in a final, you're not going to pull some rabbit out of the hat. What you're going to lose the game if you don't perform up to that level of consistency and standard that you set for yourself. So coming back in and reevaluating the game based on your standards, that's where performance improves. That's how you continue to improve things. Getting distracted by, you know, playing a big team or playing a lesser team, you know, can be very, very misleading because there can be huge swings in emotion as well among players. So it's important to look at how did we play? Did we play up to our standard? And our, and you know, and even as players individually, did you play up to the standard that you're used to?
Fergus, that's another great lesson. How does the emotions of winning against a team that's successful or weaker losing against a team that's weaker impact the emotions of a team?
Well, one of the things is, you know, when you win against a very successful team, sometimes the expectations can get out of hand, not necessarily within the team, but within family and friends and supporters. And then, greater things are expected, or suddenly you lose against a lesser team and, things again get out of control and nobody's any good. The only true measure, I keep going back to it, is how did you perform against your best standard? And by using that as your template, that's your measure of success. That's the only true measure of success. Because we as people, we're constantly trying to improve, whether it's on the field or off the field. So it's, are you getting better or are you actually getting worse? So that helps keep that emotion in check. And, with some of the very successful teams I've been around, they've established like a circle of trust. Where, as a group, when we close the door as a team, we talk about it as a team, and we, evaluate whether or not we actually got better or got worse. And that helps us ignore the media, ignore family or friends telling us that we're great or that we're not. And very importantly, it helps underline and keep, the humility of what we're doing to, central, because, you get a big win and suddenly people get overconfident, or you have a loss and people suddenly get, annoyed, upset, depressed about, everything's going bad. So it's important to keep that, that emotional control in place so that you can look at things properly and keep things in perspective.
And that kind of leads us into our last lesson you're going to share with us here, called Greg Chapel Street. And the idea being, one of those emotions of humility, being humble. And you write, humility is based on the internal image of oneself, and pride is based on what others think about you. The difference between humility and pride.
Yeah, so one of the key traits among coaches who are truly successful over long periods, has always been humility. Or it's one that I've always noticed among coaches who, you meet some great coaches who've been incredibly successful, or athletes who've been incredibly successful. And, what strikes you as you walk away is how humble they are and how well they keep their success in perspective. I tell a story in the book about, working at the 49ers one day, and a group of young soccer girls come in. They were being shown around the facility, and I end up talking to this lady who's a soccer coach, and we're just chatting for a bit, and we're just chatting about the differences between soccer in the US and in Europe. And she was quite knowledgeable, lovely lady, and she left with the girls. And somebody then asked me, "Oh, did you know Brandy? Did you coach her?" And I said, "Who's Brandy?" "Oh, that was Brandy Chastain that you were talking to earlier." And I had no idea who she was, and she never mentioned, any of her successes. But those kind of lessons really resonate, because you find that successful coaches are always asking you questions. I was in Australia a few years ago working with Cricket Australia, and, I don't have a cricket background at all, and I'm speaking to a room full of maybe 60 coaches, and there's a number of, more experienced coaches sitting at the front taking notes and asking a lot of questions, some great questions. And before I left, this one of these gentlemen gave me a book as a gift, as a thank you, called First Tests, which is about young kids learning to play their sport, cricket, on back streets in Australia. And He was a lovely guy, really, really nice. But as I was leaving at the end of the week, we're getting into the car, and I asked, the coach who was driving me to the airport, I said, "Who was the guy that gave me that book?" Because, he asked some great questions, and I just want to send him a copy of one of my books as a thank you. And he said, "That was Greg Chapel." I said, okay, Greg Chapel. And I started to write it down. I said, "What's the address of this building?" And he leaned over and he pointed up at the signpost. It was Greg Chappell Street. And Greg Chappell was a cricket legend. And this guy goes to work every morning in a building on a street that's named after him. But again, in all the time that he was asking questions, that we were talking, you know, he wasn't sitting there concentrating, thinking about himself, trying to impress on somebody else about his success. He was just constantly trying to learn. And that's what you find most interesting. And like since 59 Lessons has come out, you know, I've had, you know, emails and even handwritten notes from college coaches, you know, asking questions or wanting to get better. That's, you know, a sign of, you know, true humility, where you know that there are things that you want to get better at. And that's a very, very important trait. And an interesting thing is that there are some coaches out there that people see publicly and they come across perhaps as overly confident or arrogant, but actually behind the scenes, they're very, very humble because they're constantly searching out for any edge that they can get. So don't be confused necessarily by external images or perceptions.
Fergus, when you put this book together, what was your vision for what this could be for coaches and what you wanted them to take away? I guess in general, how you want this to be something that is a positive resource, a positive influence on coaching?
I wanted, particularly here in the States, I wanted to give examples from other sports because I didn't want to bore people by, you know, Belichick, Saban stories necessarily. I wanted to also introduce some stories and lessons from, you know, from some of the military units, from some other sports, to capture people's interest and attention, and then hit them with the lesson almost by surprise, and to intrigue them so that they could get just an exposure to some other things. I think one of the other things in the book that, you know, that I list or explain are, you can pick up lessons from everywhere, you know, from different companies, from people who are in your area. The lessons don't have to be from just your own sport. And the other thing is the principle is really important. Like, why does that work? Why does it work in that environment? And then how can I apply that? And so, you know, some of the lessons from, whether it's from soccer, from cricket or whatever, I think by presenting them in that environment, it allows coaches look at it and go, okay, I can't apply that directly, but I get the message and I get the principle. I know how I can use that in my world. And it's almost to try and prevent that cut and paste mentality. Like, you know, another story I tell in the book is about with another military unit where while we were walking around the compound, the officer stopped to pick up a piece of styrofoam, piece of litter, and he explained that they had a rule that you never, ever walk past a piece of litter. And I was wondering, what has that got to do with preparing one of the most elite units in the world? And he explained to me that it was just a simple reminder for them on a daily basis that they're no better than anybody else. And again, underlining humility, but also that even when you're out with friends and you're with other people, that it's just a constant reminder that you are still part of something that's special, but you're still a servant. You're still, it's still a servant mentality. So by presenting that lesson and that message in a different environment, you know, coaches take it and go, okay, I understand the reason behind this, and I can either, you know, directly use that never walk past a litter rule, or I can come up with something else that helps underline those two key principles. You're part of something special, but that doesn't mean that you're any better than anybody else.
And in looking at how you've put this together, these 59 lessons, you have these divided up into and they're not all equal. Some have more than others, but into six sections. What was your thought in looking at those six sections and organizing the book in that way?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, on a global scale, you know, winning is a habit. And there are some key things that are really, really important to any successful team or organization, and they're universal. You know, I talk about coaching in the gray. You know, coaching isn't black and white. It's not PlayStation. We just can't control players. There's an element of gray, and it's, you know, there's a reminder about that. You know, the smart take from the strong, which I stole. It's the title of another book, a basketball book. But, you know, you in every sport, while physical abilities are important, there, you know, the smart can still beat the strong. There are ways around that, and about being adaptable. Second section is about, you know, communication and technology. While technology and systems and all of these other things have helped improve our life, winning is still a people business. And, you know, how we communicate with, understand and communicate, not just our coaches, but the kids and players that we coach, you know, how do we connect with them? Like, one of the challenges that I had even at the 49ers was, I've got millionaire athletes who, you know, are being sold things every single day, like, you know, Nike, Adidas, Coca-Cola, whatever. How can I present broccoli or a recovery strategy to these guys? Because that's my competition. So I have to present these concepts in a way that they can see and latch onto. So I actually treated the education in recovery or nutrition as an advertising campaign, because I couldn't beat these other things that they're being sold. So I had to try and use catchphrases, logos, colors, and that's what I used to try and sell that to players. The third section is about teamwork and culture. You know, and in Game Changer, you know, I presented the model of culture as I see it. But, you know, what does that mean and what does that look like? Then we talk about management, facilitation, and leadership, because in my opinion, coaches lead through facilitation. Your job is to help facilitate your coaches, your coordinators, your players to be the best that they can be. It's a servant mentality. Mm-hmm. How can I help these people to be the best that they can be? And first and foremost, you must be secure in yourself. You can't be, you know, insecure. You can't be taking over. If you've got an OC, you can't be taking over what he's doing. You have to allow him to do his job. And the last two sections are about, you know, innovation and knowledge. Like, how do we constantly evolve? Understanding the balance between, you know, a magpie mentality, which is you just go for the shiniest thing, you know, or, you know, how do we keep that balance? And then what's the balance between evolving and then staying with the mindset that, well, this is the way we've always done it? Like, there has to be a reason for everything you do. And the last one, which we spoke about, is about humility. To me, that's one of the most important things in any program that is going to develop sustainable success.
Well, Fergus, I think this is a tremendous resource. I really like how you put it together, because these are things you could pick up this book at, you know, when you have 10 or 15 minutes here or there, and pick out one of the lessons and learn from it. It's not necessarily a book that you have to read from beginning to end to get the whole message. That it's in each single one of these lessons and chapters.
Yeah, and I look at the best compliment I've gotten about it is that it's, you know, from a coach, was it's made me think about some things differently. And that's really if that's the only thing I can do in a coach is inspire them to think of an idea or a principle in a different way, then the person's going to get better, whether they agree with it or not. If you can make the same with your players and your coaches, if you can get them to think and critically analyze something, then they're getting better. Whether they agree with you or not, they're always getting better. You want to constantly be trying to help your coaches evaluate what they're doing and improving. And like I said, presenting lessons from whether it's military or other sports or athletes or whatever, You're just constantly trying to get people to improve and improve in the right way.
For our listeners out there, again, the book is 59 Lessons Working with the World's Elite Coaches, Athletes, and Special Forces. Fergus, where can they find your book?
It's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. It's out now on Kindle as well. But yeah, Amazon's the easiest way to get it.
And how can we connect with you?
I'm on Twitter is probably my best medium, Fergus on, underscore Conley, or my website, fergusconley.com.
All right, and we'll put both of those links, as well as a link to your book, in our show notes for coaches out there. Fergus, it's always great to catch up with you. Thank you for putting together this resource. I think it's going to be something that's great for coaches and help a lot of people out.
Well, Keith, thank you for having me, and you guys are doing some great, great work that's having a great impact around the country. So I'm humbled and honored to be able to help in any way I can.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.